All right, everyone, welcome. It's a little bit smaller turnout than I'd hope. I'm hoping people actually start walking in. For everyone here, my name is Jeff Newman, and I'm the chair of the IOC RCRC drafting team. So International Olympic Committee, Red Cross, Red Crescent drafting team. And we are a drafting team of the GNSO Council. We were asked to, or we were chartered, I guess, without an official charter, but we were asked to look into the issues of the GAC proposal dated last September in order to look at the issues of protections of the Red Cross and Olympic names at the top and second level. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go around the room and ask everyone to introduce themselves and who they're with. But before I do that, I just want to tell everyone that this is not meant as an informational session, but more as a working session. So we don't have any presentations or slides or nice fancy things like that. It's really to continue with the work of the drafting team and to get input on the questions that have been posed. And hopefully everybody followed the assignments that we had, which was basically to go back to our stakeholder groups, constituencies, advisory committees to answer the questions that we posed for protections at the second level. And we will post those shortly. Since it was in an email, it actually has to be put into a document in order to get posted. So I think that's it that's going up there now. So again, I'm Jeff Newman, I'm the chair of the drafting team. I'm with the registry stakeholder group, but as the chair, I am completely neutral on these subjects. So I don't know if Debbie's ready. I'll start from Debbie over there to introduce herself, and then we'll work around the horseshoe and then go around the back.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Deborah Hughes, and I work with the American Red Cross, and I'm also here representing the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies.
Good morning. My name is Charlotte Lindsay. I'm the Director of Communication for the International Committee of the Red Cross.
Good morning. Stefan Hankins, Legal Advisor, International Committee of the Red Cross.
Good morning. My name is Wolfgang Kleinwächter. I'm a member of the GNSO Council from the Non-Commercial User Constituency.
Good morning. This is Karen Malincharyville with Silverberg, Goldman, and Bykov.
This is Jim Bykoff. I'm a member of the IPC and also representing the International Olympic Committee.
Margie Milam with ICANN staff.
Marika Konings, ICANN staff.
Brian Peck, ICANN staff.
Alan Greenberg, I'm the liaison to the GNSO from the At-Large Advisory Committee.
Chuck Gomes, representing the Registry Stakeholder Group.
Mary Wong, GNSO Council and the Non-Commercial Users Constituency Representative to this team.
Thomas Rickert, Nominating Committee appointee to the GNSO Council.
John Berard with the Business Constituency.
Waiter.
Avery Doria, NCSG.
Okay, I don't know if we have handheld mics or if for the people that are in the seats behind the table, they just come on up. There's a handheld mic.
Thank you. I'm Kirsten Baxter. I'm legal counsel from CERN, the NIGO in Geneva.
Diane Norissier, legal counsel at CERN too.
My name is Roland Stautas. I work for the International Criminal Court in The Hague.
I'm Heather Forrest. I'm a member of the IPC, and I work for OSS Registry International.
I don't know if the gentleman that just walked in wants to...
Igor Burkhardt, I'm with the World Bank.
Thank you. So, okay, we're going to get started. So the drafting team is really to look at the Olympic Red Cross marks, and it's really good that the IGO representatives are here, although we won't be touching on those marks in this session. It's good to have you all here, and you could see what some of our thinking or thought processes are, and hopefully, you know, right now that those are potentially the subject of a GNSO PDP at the moment. Okay, with all that said, let me go into some background as to where we are and where we need to go. I am going to, just so you know, I'm going to try to push us a little bit, not one way or the other, but to just move. I think we've had a number of great calls since between the meetings, but you know, it has been almost since September, so almost a year that we've had this issue. And you know, my goal now is to just get us moving, like I said, one way or the other. And so, just to go into a background of where we are, and I'm just going to pull up that email. I can't read it up there, so I'm going to pull it up for myself. I don't know if you all can read that. If, by the way, we do have an Adobe Connect room, which is off of the schedule. So if you went to the schedule for today, clicked on the session, you can click on the Adobe Connect room, and that's for remote participants, but also us if you can't, like me, read that and want to just follow where we are. Thanks, Margie. So we have already worked on the top level, protections at the top level for the first round. We sent our recommendations to the GNSO Council. The GNSO Council approved those. Those went up to the board. The board declined to adopt those for the first round, citing, you know, thanking us for the work and for the thoughtful work, and just basically stating that since it was so late into the process, they were going to just go with the status quo. They really didn't comment on agreement or disagreement with the recommendations that we had, but it was more a function of, at least at that point in time, the window was supposed to close a day or two later, the application window. No one foresaw the glitch that happened, so although it actually ended up closing over a month later, that was the board had made its decision. That decision has been questioned at different times from different groups, but we're not here to deal with that. We're really now talking about protections at the second level. So the GAC proposal at the second level is fairly straightforward, and I want to stick to the GAC proposal. There have been several discussions that we've had of additional protections that were above and beyond what was presented in the GAC proposal. And for this meeting, and I've talked to at least Stefan from the Red Cross about, they have additional proposals of things like string similarity that were not included in the GAC proposal. That's not to say we won't ultimately look at that, but at least for this meeting today, and until we get some sort of closure on at least our thoughts on the GAC proposal, I want to stick to that GAC proposal. So the GAC proposal itself, excuse me, my voice is going a little bit, was to essentially add a new schedule of second-level reserve names to the new GTLD registry agreement. That agreement has been posted. It's been out there for a long time, almost a year or longer. What they said is that the current schedule of reserve names should add what the GAC had attached as Schedule A to their proposal, and it was to protect those marks, these identical marks. It was not for string similarity. It was literally those identical marks. They are included in the email, and maybe Margie can post that. I'm not sure. It's in the Word document that was attached to that email. And also that those marks, those identical terms, were to be posted in the six UN languages with a, quote, encouragement to registries to provide additional languages if they chose to do so. Again, I'm going to note that the GAC did not ask for string similarity. The GAC just asked for those specific terms. So it's a much more limited subset than a number of our discussions have that we've had. So those should go up there on the screen at soon.
Yeah, it's just kind of hard because if I go on an email.
Okay. We'll just see it. And that's fine. So what I had done in an email, in several emails, but I think the last one was dated June 1st, was restate the different options that this group has. And we had gotten together at a couple different meetings over the last several months. We've had presentations from the Olympic Committee. We've had presentations from the Red Cross. Hold on a second. That's okay. So we've had presentations on why these two organizations believe that there's justification for the protections of these marks. We've presented them with questions of, first of all, why these organizations believe that the existing protections that are put forth in the applicant guidebook are not sufficient, and why they believe that there should be these additional protections. We've also asked them to provide us with information on the scope and definition of the problems that they hope to resolve with these additional protections, again, like I said, why the existing protections they believe do not protect them adequately. And the Olympic, with a big thanks to the Olympic Committee and to the Red Cross for providing that information. And I believe, Debbie, I know that, and the Red Cross, I know that you had given us at the GNSO Council level a paper, an additional paper, the other day. Were you able to send that around to the list, the mailing list?
Thank you. This is Debbie Hughes for the record. I just received an electronic copy of that paper, so I can definitely send it to the list. We're having some email issues with my colleague here to my right, but we will definitely send that around to the list. But we did provide printed copies to all the counselors on Saturday, but we will definitely get an electronic copy. Stefan, do you still have some additional copies here? We can definitely see if there's additional copies for anyone in the room who might want a copy.
Okay, thanks, Debbie. And for everyone else that's not on the drafting team, the mailing list is public, like all of ICANN's working groups and drafting teams. And so that would be great if you could send that around as soon as possible. So we have some different options here. And the homework, which I'm hoping everyone here has engaged in, and I know that the registries have because I was able to sit through that meeting, was to essentially discuss these options with their groups and to come here with some, while maybe not formal opinion, but a good indication as to where their constituencies, stakeholder groups, or advisory committees are on this very issue. So the first option that we could all adopt that is in the email is, you know, we could say, no, the protections that are in the guidebook are enough. That's all we're willing to go to at this point for whatever reasons. Option two is that we could change the schedule of reserve names in the registry agreement in a number of different ways. And to summarize the different options, you can handle the Olympic Committee marks and the Red Cross marks separately or differently. You can handle them the same, and then you could protect all of those marks or protect some of those marks. And so those really define what the options in that email were. And then if you decide that there are additional protections, then a whole bunch of other questions flow from there. And I won't go over those now, but if we do decide as a group ultimately that we would like some sort of protections, then we will have to get to those other questions. So with that, I kind of want to turn it over to the group, and I don't know who wants to volunteer first, but I do plan on calling on people to use as Mary knows, the Socratic method, and calling on people to see if they've discussed this with their organizations. To really, the goal is to move it forward. For those that walked in, forward doesn't necessarily mean for or against. It just means to move it. And so does anybody want to volunteer to go first? And I'm looking at Chuck, so I'll ask him to go first because I know we discussed this.
I guess I'll volunteer. Good morning, everyone. Chuck Gomes. The registry's a registered stakeholder group did discuss this yesterday, and the position of the registries is to support the recommendations by the GAC, in other words, exactly as their Annex A, the exact terms that they recommend for both organizations. Now, I'll let you know that we did discuss the topic of separation of the two organizations, and decided if you're going to apply the criteria that the GAC gave to one, you have to apply it to the other. But as will come up later, if we get that far, we do support some sort of an exception process that would allow for concerns like you have communicated and so forth, Wolfgang. So I think that covers it. Jeff, did I leave anything out on that?
No, I think that's that's basically it. So thank you, Chuck, and that's good to have the registry's input. Would anyone else like to volunteer with either their own, their committee, or their constituency stakeholder group? So I have Alan, then I have Thomas.
Thank you. I have not raised the specific questions with them, but we have had extensive discussions with both individuals and the group. A number of things. First of all, there's a strong feeling at large that separating the two would make the decision process, because, to be blunt, there is far more sympathy for the Red Cross case than for the IOC case. We are rethinking, or at large is rethinking, the position that they put forward originally to look more at, to look at it less from a philosophical point of view than from a user-oriented point of view. And one of our main concerns in our existence is, are users able to use the internet and domain name system properly? And clearly being caught by fraudulent requests for money or fraudulent other things is a very significant concern of ours. It's not quite clear how we balance all of those together, but we will continue working on it. Thank you.
So just to recap the points that I have, that currently, at least, there's a trend to want to treat them differently. And at this point, I'm trying to just try to reword what you just said, because it was doesn't answer the questions directly, but it was more that they're looking at it now less from a philosophical standpoint of, but more from a how do internet domain name users or from a but why don't you see if you can recap that again?
We are sympathetic to a lot of the requests, including the contained within type 1, although we appreciate how completely difficult it is. One might be able to prevent the name Red Cross Japanese Tsunami from being registered. We don't see any way you can prevent Japanese Tsunami from being registered and having a Red Cross on its home page. So we understand the difficulties, and there is some interest in trying to come to closure on it. I can't be more specific, because I don't think we have a single unified view. At large is a rather diverse group, and I'm working to try to bridge various views, and we'll continue working on it. This week was a bad time to try to have that discussion. I managed to squeeze in 7 minutes yesterday, but it was difficult.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Does anyone? Oh, I have Thomas and then Avery.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Thomas Rickert. Now, the comment that you made, Chuck, I think this is going a little bit too fast for me at the moment. In my view, we need to sort of try to work off different aspects of the question that the group has been tasked with. Number one is, what is existing in terms of protection? So I think even if we were, if there was consensus in the group that protection is needed for these two organizations' names, the question remains whether existing policy on reserved names or on protection is sufficient, or whether additional protections are needed. And in order to separate that, during the last conference call, I tried to understand and ask some questions about what the threat scenario would be. And maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit more. So I think in order to understand what reaction we need to understand what the problem is. So do we actually need special policy for these names in order to prevent fraud? And what can policy answers to potential threats be? Also, we shouldn't confuse protection for identical strings as the ones listed with those with similar strings. I can say that from what I've heard so far, but I've asked additional questions that we've been discussing in the meantime, I'm happy to learn more and understand better what reactions might be. But the way the situation presents itself to me at the moment, I do understand that the GAC mandate or the GAC request concentrates on identical strings. While from what I've seen in terms of the watch lists, most of the threats do come from similar strings. So I think that there's almost nothing happening with identical strings. And if we're talking about identical strings, then the question is, what is the response or the policy response to protect these organizations for infringements for identical strings? And I think that we have rights protection mechanisms there with Sunrise and for similar strings in the absence of newer information. I think that this might be covered by the US and that we can't possibly give, with the task that we got, protection for similar strings, regardless of technical feasibility. So that for my interim conclusion would be to discuss with you how to overcome potential financial and administrative burden in applying, let's say, the URS. But that wouldn't require a different policy to achieve the goal. Have I been clear with that, or are there questions?
Yeah, no, I think I understand, and I definitely want to keep us only talking about the identical in this. So I know what things have been asked for, but I really want to talk about identical because that's what the GAC proposal was. If we get through all of this and we decide as a group and the GNSO Council agrees as an organization to have us look at similar, then we can get to that at that point. But at this point, at this table, we're only looking at the identical because that's what the GAC had put in their proposal. So the Olympic Committee, right? So the Olympic Committee and the Red Cross have provided us with information, and the question I'd have back to you, and I'll let them address it, is what information did you not find in the materials that we had that you need in order to make your decision? Because I think that's key, because we've for several months have said we need more information. Mm-hmm. The organizations have provided us information. I need to know from you whether that's the right information or not. One of the questions I'd pose to the Olympic Committee is, Thomas has a point that says, since we're talking about identical, but most of the information you've provided is for similar, is that a function of, as Thomas may have said, is that a function of you don't see it happening, or could that be a function of you're doing sunrises for those? And so you're spending, you know, what I've seen in some of the papers that they have submitted is that they spend a lot of money in the rights protection mechanisms, implying that they apply for these during the sunrise. So the reason you're not seeing in the watch reports the identical is because they've actually already registered them. They've had to. And so one of the things that they've said in their paper and we can question this or not, is that they've spent a lot of money on that. So I'll turn it over for those guys, because that's information that's already in there. So maybe let me ask the question back at Thomas. What other information do you need? And then I'll go back to the Olympic Committee of the Red Cross to talk about that.
When we asked for information on threat scenarios, I was, from the way it appeared at the time, I was expecting that a lot of threat came from the registration and use of identical strings. What I've seen from the watch reports is that the vast majority, at least, of the registrations is similar strings. So we do have Sunrise for identical strings, so there is protection in place with not only the option to get identical strings registered as domain names, but also with the Trademark Claim Service. And I think that at the moment I'm not convinced that additional policy is needed to address these threats, because I haven't seen that there is an awful lot of threat coming from identical strings. I see threats from similar strings, but there are mechanisms in place for identical strings.
Okay, I'm gonna turn it over if Jim or Kieran want to speak, and then I have Avery and then Mary.
The information that we presented before the last teleconference was quite voluminous and included examples of violations of the Olympic marks, mostly with similar strings, but we also have the problem with identical. And in fact, we're in the midst right now of trying to deal with a translation in one of the UN languages of an identical mark that's being used on a cyber, by a cyber squatter. So it really is both. We have provided information, and we, I think similar to the Red Cross, the big problem for us is going to be the similar strings, because the identicals are a much more narrow subset that we've been dealing with. But we expect a very large volume on the similar strings, especially since right now with the existing 22 TLDs, we have huge numbers. What the reports that I've submitted are really mostly COM, NET, and ORG, and BIS. But if we go to the CCTLDs, it just gets to be, I wouldn't want to flood you with the amount of paper, but thousands of pages of infringements. So that we would really like to have some kind of reasonable ambit of protection here. We feel that it's warranted, and we feel that we're flexible enough to build in the provisions we discussed at the top level for the second level as far as consenting to anything that would be fair use, and also agreeing to have a panel that would decide cases that applicants want to assert rights. And so we're not looking to have a complete exclusion, but subject to reasonable precautions.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Let me go to, I have Aubrey and then Mary.
Just to remind everyone to give your names before you speak so that the people who are here can know who spoke.
Okay, thanks.
This is Aubrey Doria. I sent out the questions on the NCSG discuss list, and I think, you know, there's various different views in the two constituencies. I think it's fairly safe to say that there isn't consensus for the GAC proposal as written. I think there's a lot of support that varies between, certainly there's a lot of support for separating the issue. There's a lot of support for an understanding of the Red Cross issue. There's a lot of support for the and I know we're not supposed to talk about it, but it's tightly turned into the consideration on the request. There's a lot of support for the broader question of, if we're looking at this kind of support, we're saying it's reasonable that there be this kind of support, and there are various good reasons for it, then there are other groups that must be considered, and that therefore, if one has to take the GAC request as both exactly as the GAC put it, no, there's not support for that. If one has to say, is there support for Red Cross? Probably. Is there support for the IOC? Probably less so, unless that is within the context of the broader question. When looking at the, you know, both groups were very good at giving us their, you know, sui generis reasons for why they needed it. And in looking at those, they were different. One would expect that to be the case when people have individual reasons. And one reason, I think that there's close to consensus that, yeah, that one does have a certain, you know, call for it. You know, there's just, between Geneva Conventions and treaties and, you know, Red Crosses on people's helmets in times of war, that there's a certain, you know, amount of, oh, okay. There's certainly a group in this non-consensus that says no second-level protections for anyone without a proper PDP process to overcome the previous PDP process that said no second-level. So as I say, there's a very wide-ranging conversation, as one would expect in a group as diverse as ours. It's not no, nothing for anyone, but there's this has to be looked at much more carefully, much more specifically, and that a divided question, there's certainly support for a divided question, but there's not support for the GAC proposal as written.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. Is there any other information that you or your group would need in order to come to, I don't want to say consensus, but come to a finality where you could document the different positions with some sort of certainty, if that makes any sense?
I'm sure that, you know, views could be documented. I think one of the important things is that documentation would have to include the things you say it may not include. And as it has to include the IGO considerations. It has to include the other organizations that aren't IGOs but are international organizations that have similar threats in terms of fraud, in terms of, you know, going out and providing assistance and have missions such as that. So I think that certainly, and that's one of the things we're hoping comes from a PDP, there's certainly a lot of sympathy and a lot of support for many different things. But to lay it out is really the reason why we've talked so much about the PDP. And I know people say it takes too long. Look at how often all this stuff slips here. And we believe that a PDP could be done. We've seen cases like IRTPC where you decide to work every week, twice every week if you need to. And, you know, you do get it done by the time we would have the new GTLDs. So we believe that that's really the right way to approach it. And that's where we would need to lay out all those special cases. What are the various reasons that make this something that is merited? As I say, if there was just one question on the, oh, you know, International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, of course, I always miss the fact that Maganda Davida Dom isn't in the list often, although it was in the GACS list, so I was very happy to see that. So, you know, that I think there's almost a, oh, well, yeah, we see that, sure. But going beyond without going further is problematic.
And
Mary and, you know, Wolfgang will give, you know, more perspective on it. But that's my sense of sort of the NCSG overall conversation. And so the basic question on one is there consensus to do as the GAC requests, period, in a box? I would say there isn't.
Okay, thanks. Mary, you want to add to that? Wolfgang, did you have your hand raised? Or Aubrey had said you might want to add to it. So I didn't.
List next. Okay. So,
okay, Mary.
Thanks, Jeff. And actually, I think Avery covered probably 85% of what I was going to say. I think for the record, well, this is Mary Wong, NCUC, but Avery and I are each other's alternates for NCSG and NCUC. So I would just want to add a couple of specific points. I think one is that a reason why there is some feeling in the group, in NCUC as well as NCSG on a broader level, for the IGO issue is that we are told that is an issue that is of concern to our fellow constituency, the new NPOC, at least members within that. We also note and thank Margie and Brian, especially for the preliminary issue report on that. And I acknowledge and understand this is beyond the remit of this particular group and certainly, Jeff, beyond what you want to talk about today. So I'll only say that in looking at that report, those of us who have looked at it believe that there is growing consensus in our group, to the extent you can call it consensus, but support. All right, let me withdraw the word consensus and use the word support for considering the second level issue within this group within the larger context of a more general examination. And one reason why we might think that, or some of us might think that, is that the legal basis for the protections, I know there's been discussion and documentation offered for the two specific organizations here. We haven't seen, and maybe we might not yet see, the ones for the IGOs. I think the issue report does raise questions that, in terms of consistent policy making, some of us would prefer to see dealt with at an overall level as opposed to specific on a case-by-case basis. And the final thing I will add is to go back to earlier statements that NCUC has made in this process. One is regard to the possibility of splitting the two organizations and protections, therefore. And secondly, the possibility of examining specific mechanisms, not so much policies as in there are reserve names for X, Y, and Z designations, but mechanisms, whether it be an exception or some kind of fee waiver or some other support program, if the predominant reason for these two organizations' request is really the sheer volume and the costs and the distractions from their mission.
Okay, thanks, Mary. I have Alan, and then I have...
Can I have one sentence?
Sure, okay.
Sorry. When the word on IGO comes up, I've heard, and this is also from our, you know, from the MPOC side of NCSG, some people are sometimes using it just the intergovernmental organizations, and some people are using it for the international, you know, organizations. And I think that there's concern both for just the IGOs and for other international organizations. And so I think that that is also not a strict cutting line, that some people believe there may be other international organizations that may not be, strictly speaking, treaty organizations that are IGOs that may also merit special consideration if we're going into special consideration.
Okay, thank you, Avery. Alan?
Thank you. I think at large has a lot of similar feelings to what was just described. I do not believe I've had a call for a full PDP, but in terms of end results, it's not dissimilar. At the same time, we fully recognize the difficulty of saying, well, we should go past IGOs to Oxfam, you know, there's not going to be a lot of sympathy for making sure that we protect the International Federation of Impoverished Racing Car Drivers, retired racing car drivers, you know, who may claim a similar international charitable status. So I don't see how we're going to get to an endpoint that's manageable on an operational basis from those starting points. But there are sympathies for the whole range of types of things and cynicism, similarly, about many of them also.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Okay, Jim.
I just want to say I'm hearing words like sympathy and that sort of thing. I think our proposal is based on legal principles. In many countries, the use of Olympic words is strictly forbidden, and we based our proposal on the standards that were enunciated by the GAC. So I think that we feel that we are entitled to the special protection, similar to the other group. And, you know, while you may have more sympathy for one group than the other, I think that the legal threads that were spoken by the GAC in their proposal are basically both organizations have those protections. So that somebody using the word or a similar string would be violating national laws, whether it's in a domain name or on a product. Jim Bykoff.
Thanks, Jim. I'm going to go. I have Avery. Sorry. Okay. Let me hold up. Let me write these down. So I have Avery, I forgot. It's Red Cross. Sorry. I wish we had names in front of us here. I have Thomas and Mary. Did I get everyone? Okay, Aubrey.
Thank you. This is Aubrey Doria again. The reason I use the word sympathies, this is indirect, is we are not, well, many of us probably are lawyers. I don't happen to be. We are not a court. We are not a national court letter or an international tribunal. So for us to judge it as we agree that you have a legal right in those three countries and they have a right, you know, internationally and the rights are, would be inappropriate. So therefore, we can speak of our tendency to support. Word sympathies is indeed a shortcut for me to declare that we have legally decided that one group deserves it and one group doesn't deserve it would be, you know, something I couldn't possibly say.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. And it sort of leads me to a question, maybe. In addition to documenting the different views that you expressed of the NCUC and NCSG, perhaps as part of that you could document the criteria that your group used in order to come to those, if that's possible, in order to come to those positions. I mean, well, right, and so what Aubrey said, or what I think she said is, well, that's part of what the PDP is for, and that's true, but even if we don't come to a final decision, if you could document some of those will certainly help in the PDP process, if that's ultimately what the group is. What I'm trying to do is, again, move forward doesn't necessarily mean move forward one position or the other, but if we can, you know, even if the ultimate outcome of this group is we have to rely on the PDP, we have to go through the more full process, we at least will be helpful to that PDP by documenting our discussions and the criteria that we use, because we're just going to face, we being the community, are just going to face these same questions. So to the extent we can get it on paper, that would be very helpful. So I have the Red Cross over here that would like to address the questions as well.
Yes, thank you very much. I think what is important to underline, and I think has been underlined previously by colleagues, is that the protection according to the Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Crystal, and other designations is not linked to any trademark status or other. It is, the designations are specifically protected under the Geneva Conventions, so international treaty, and very much are used about for the protection of persons in times of warfare, and it very much is a question of protecting lives in situations of conflict and humanitarian crises. That's very much where the origins of the use of these emblems stemmed from, and it's very important not to be able to in any way pollute or prejudice that protection by their use in any way. And we invest heavily in trying to ensure that the emblems are respected and recognized as such, and that any designations on the use of the designations Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Crystal, and others are protected and respected in order that the primary protection that's afforded to those who have to go into conflict and humanitarian crises to protect individuals is actually protected and respected. And primarily that is the concern. The second issue is very much that they are there to indicate the different members of the components of the movement. And again, we have to spend a lot of time to ensure that that protection is recognized. So very much we want to separate the notion of these being about indicative from these being about protective nature. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And just your name for the record for the
Charlotte,
thank you. Okay, I have Thomas, then Mary.
I heard now that there are thoughts of separating the two organizations. Jim, you said something about sympathy. All these factors at the moment don't play a role for me. I think the status quo is that we do have this new GTLD program, and that when it was crafted, there was policy work on that. So there was put some thought into whether or not, into the question whether or not protection should be granted to certain information to certain organizations and what these protections should be. The outcome of that were the GNSO recommendations that have been turned ultimately into the rights protection mechanisms as they stand. So for me, the fundamental question is, before these even have been put to a reality test, before we've learned whether these would suffice or not to protect not only these two organizations, but serve the community with adequate protection, shall we change policy now? So I think the question to us should be, has something been forgotten when crafting the policy, or is there a threat scenario for these two organizations, and that's the task of the drafting team, that would justify amending existing policy, or even, you know, not only amending, but you know, turning existing policy upside down, basically, in order to prevent certain threats to become real. And as far as I understood, the most threats come from similar names. That would be out of scope of our discussion at the moment. And for identical strings from the existing ones, Jimmy just mentioned another case where you had an identical string, but it appears like there were singular cases. And my conclusion from that would be to see whether, you know, singular cases would actually justify a new policy, or whether we should the existing RPMs do a reality check, try to find ways to lower the administrative and cost burden, you know, so it's not that much a policy question, but maybe an economic question that we need to answer. So I do understand that that donors' money should not go into brand protection, but it should go into your core mandate. I think that, you know, there might be unanimity in this group, but at least that's something that I would prefer to happen. But I think that lacking other urging information that existing policy does not help, I would not tend to recommend to the GNSO Council to change the existing policy. That might be different if we see that that you know, judging from facts, that with the introduction of new GTLDs, that a lot of abuse is taking place with identical names, and that you have, you know, you would either have enormous costs in defensively registering those, or that you get an awful lot of trademark claims notices that you have to work on. But I think that at the moment that this is more an economic question rather than a policy question. Thank you.
Okay, I have in the queue, I have Mary, Alan, Chuck, and Wolfgang. Okay, Mary.
Thanks, Jeff. Mary Wong again. So let me start by first picking up on Thomas's point, which I think in and of itself picks up on the point that I made earlier. I certainly think that it is much safer and probably better policy for this group and the GNSO to proceed along the lines that we are suggesting, which is to look at the actual mechanisms by which organizations such as the two in this group can be assisted in terms of alleviating the burden of defensive registrations or fighting claims. There might even be ways that we've seen the list now, and there's a bunch of different types of new GTLDs that might come down the pike. There might even be ways where each of these or some of these new operators could be encouraged to assist in terms of pre-launch or post-launch protections and enforcement cost issues for these organizations. I certainly think that is maybe more incremental, but a better policy for us. And that's linked to the point that I wanted to make a little earlier, which goes back to Jim's comment. I'm not a public international lawyer, although I am a lawyer. And I think what we have seen is that there are clear operational issues for these two organizations. I think the research and the documentation provided by the organizations show that to a fairly large extent. What we haven't seen, or at least what we haven't discussed, and I'm not sure that it is good for this group or the GNSO or ICANN writ large to discuss the actual legal basis. And on the question of the differences between the two organizations, there has been discussion within our group as to whether protection of the Olympic symbol through a treaty and then a web of national legislation that differs in its specificity is different legally, jurisprudentially, from the way the Red Crescent movement in and of itself is protected under an entirely different convention for somewhat different reasons. I don't know that we've actually had that discussion. Like I said, I'm not sure that that's something that this group or this organization is equipped to do. We haven't seen the legal research, at least, and if there has been produced, I apologize if I made a mistake, that the GAC used for its rationale. And without that kind of information, even if we believe that this organization is well equipped to do that, I don't see how we can make those distinctions, and therefore I would urge that we look at specific mechanisms as opposed to more general policy.
Thanks, Marian. And that is a point that the last point about not having seen the research is a point that we made to the GAC, at least not having seen the legal research done by the ICANN board in initially making its recommendation. But also, I guess that would include, but we didn't say this to the GAC this meeting, we did in previous meetings, had a request to see their research in going into the proposal that they made. I think we should reiterate those requests over and over. I do know that at the board meeting, the board GAC meeting yesterday, that the GAC had raised this issue with the board of not having seen the redacted pages of the board report, which I assumed would include some of that legal research, but it's, of course, an assumption because it's all redacted. Or I should say I would hope it includes some of that research. Okay, I have Alan, Chuck, and then Wolfgang.
Can I just say apologetically, I have to go give a report in another meeting, so I apologize for walking out on this one, but I'll be online and follow the rest of the conversation later. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey.
And it's Alan. I'll apologize in advance because I have to leave shortly. There was several years ago an issue report, I think it was a formal issue report, on protecting IGOs in general, and the GNSO chose in its wisdom to say, nah, we're not going to do that. Things come around again. I do not see, despite what was said, how we are going to address these two issues in the first round with the PDP. As fast as a PDP is likely to be, it is not likely to be finished and made formal ICANN policy in a timely manner for when the first GTLDs are likely to hit the street. How much operationally that matters, I don't know, but I don't think we can make that kind of commitment, because even a PDP that we know the answer to before we start takes something like 9 or 10 months. This was not one of those. This one is a lot worse than that. Especially when you look at the estimate of 5,000 IGOs and a wider group of, you know, charitable organizations and things like that that people are now talking about, the mind just boggles how we're going to come to closure on that one. So I think we need to do some work. I think we need to come up with an answer. Whether it pleases the people on that side of the table or not, I don't know. But I don't think we can avoid the issue.
Okay, thanks, Alan. And just to note, though, if we do a PDP, it doesn't have to resolve before the first new TLDs come out. PDP, if it results in a consensus policy, will automatically amend the agreements. Now, there'll be a question of fairness and all that, so I know that that's where you're going. But
plus, we were asked to address the problem in new GTLDs, and the first year of new GTLDs, if indeed the problem is as large as some people fear it might be, could be hell. Even if it was cleared up a year later. So,
okay. And one thing before people leave as well, I know people are going to head to other meetings, and I have Wolfgang, Mary, and Margie in the queue. Oh, I'm sorry, Chuck. I crossed you out because I was just about to call on you. Sorry. So I have Chuck first. One thing I want you to think about is, okay, so where do you see us going from here? What would be your advice as far as next steps? Help me out as the chair. So, Chuck.
Okay, like several others, I have to leave to go to a conflicting meeting. But following up on what Alan said, this is I had a related question. Is it the task of this group, and I know we have to respond to the GAC request on second level. That was their main request, and we need to do that in a timely fashion. But is it correct to assume that any recommendation we might give to the GNSO Council on this would be very similar to what we did at the top level in recommending it for the first round, if it happens in time, and that any longer-term decision would be part of the PDP for the second level?
Our recommendation is for this current round only. Any longer-term recommendations would have to be done through, I wouldn't necessarily say PDP, but a more extensive process. Okay, Wolfgang, then Mary and Margie. And again, if you could also address what you see as the next steps.
This is Wolfgang Kleinwächter again. You know, I think it should be absolutely clear that this group and also the constituency where I am are against all kinds of misuse and fraud and all this. So this has to be corrected. So we do not support any kind of wrongdoing, in the new TTLD space. And we have to be very careful to have the right mechanisms in place to stop this misuse. On the other hand, I want to have some clarification because you just spoke about the emblem, which is from the Red Cross, which is really crucial. You have the flag, you have ambulances with the emblem and all this. And the IOC has also the five Olympic rings, which is a very, very remarkable emblem. But we are talking about strings in domain names. And so I understand that on websites, there is a misuse of this emblem, that you can have a website, which can have each name, and then you have the Red Cross emblem, which is a misuse and has to be rejected. But this cannot be the task of this group here. So I think we are dealing with domain names, and you cannot, have the emblem or the five Olympic rings, in a domain name.
I'm sorry. Can I just clarify?
Yeah?
I'm sorry. I just want to clarify. The term emblem is a term of art. So when we say emblem, we're talking about the words as well as the symbol. So in the Geneva Conventions and in international humanitarian law, as it relates to the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, and I'm sorry, this is Debbie Hughes for the record, the term emblem, when you hear us say that, we're speaking about the words because they are a protective emblem to the world. They mean don't shoot here, allow safe passage, okay? So we're not, and be very clear, I understand we're talking about domain names, words, right? But from our perspective, and sorry for the confusion, the word emblem also refers to the words, right? That's they're we're referring to words. When we also talk about emblem, we're also talking about the logos, the crescent, the cross, the crystal as well.
Okay, that's why I asked it for clarification. Thank you for this clarification.
Okay, thanks, Wolfgang. Thanks, Debbie. I have Mary, then Margie.
A couple of quick points, I think. We all recognize that a PDP could take a long time, and that's certainly something that troubles the GAC, we all know. But to the extent that we're going to say, well, we need to respond to the GAC, therefore we need to do this, I think it's almost worse to say we have to do it this way because our ordinary processes are going to take too long. I think that if that is a problem, then we have to find a process that reduces that problem. Jeff is going to hate me for mentioning the three letters IRT, which did what we thought was a fairly large amount of work, which obviously was then subject to greater community input in a fairly short period of time. So I'm not saying use the same mechanism, but I'm saying if time is a problem, we have to then find a way that minimizes that problem instead of not doing it at all. Then, Jeff, with respect to your question, where do we go from here? I guess I can't speak for Thomas, but I suppose one way we could do it is to ask whether there's any support in this group for pursuing, at least generally, what he and I seem to be suggesting, which is to look at specific mechanisms. Because we could say to the GAC, for example, hypothetically, not presuming any conclusion, that this is their proposal, this may be also ours,
Or we could also say that here are some specific mechanisms that the community, at least a majority of the community, believes might go some way towards alleviating the hardships that have been identified with these two groups without necessarily touching the IO or the IGO issue, which is for another day. And then at some time certain, before or at the time the RPMs are due to be reviewed by the GNSO, as Thomas was saying, take a look at, you know, take a snapshot, get some metrics as to whether those are working. If not, then I think there's an even greater case that we do need to either do a PDP or something at that point, but look into mechanisms to alleviate the hardships and the problems that have been identified by these groups to date.
Okay, thanks, Mary. And one of those mechanisms could be reserving the names, right? That is a mechanism, and that's the mechanism proposed by the GAC.
Exactly.
So we sort of come a little bit in a circle, but saying that there could be other options as well.
I'm trying to rephrase the issue in a way more specific so that we're focused on the mechanism and process and not the policy question.
Right, and I just want to, and I think it's right, I think I want to clarify, when I say respond to the GAC, it literally means respond. It could be yes, it could be no, it could be we need more information, it could be we need to go to the PDP, it could be we can look at mechanisms. So when I say response and you say things like rush to respond, I don't necessarily mean respond substantively with a yes or a no.
Thanks, Jeff, and I wasn't thinking of you at that point, so no worries there.
Okay, I have Margie.
This is Margie. A couple things I wanted to point out. As Mary indicated, we did publish a preliminary issue report on these issues, and I hope that you all submit public comment. And it goes into some analysis on some of the legal basis, for example. And it also touches upon the prior work, that the prior issue report that you mentioned, Alan, about IGOs. At that time, the issue report was focused narrowly on the issue of whether there should be a specific dispute mechanism procedure. It didn't go into the second level or any other, you know, rights protection mechanisms, and it did get voted down several years ago. So I just wanted to highlight that. But the other thing to note, that because we're already in the process of kicking off the PDP, the time period is not perhaps as long as you might think, because we're not starting from scratch. We're already in the public comment for the preliminary issue report. We'll issue the final issue report. Brian, when does it close? By summer, by August, you may see the final issue report, at which point the council could act and start the PDP process. And then on your point, Jeff, with respect to whether the work of this group is limited to the first round, I didn't believe that was the case, because I believe the GAC response was from the board request, and the board request wasn't seeking input just for the first round. In fact, it was the opposite. The board, you know, announced the moratorium for the first round and wanted policy advice, you know, essentially for the other rounds. So you know, if you're trying to think of next steps, melding the two processes may be appropriate. You may continue doing the work, you know, this is a suggestion, obviously, in this group to try to get consensus around, you know, substantive issues, and that may help shorten the period in a PDP, you know, should the PDP get commenced, following the process that we've already, you know, that's already been kicked off on that preliminary issue report.
Thanks, Margie. That's, you're right. I think when I was said it was the first round, I think that's something we kind of informally agreed to as a group, as opposed to what the GAC had asked for. So you're absolutely right. I'll go to Alan.
Just on that small area, we did explicitly say that the advice at the first level was for the first round, and should it not be taken, then we reserve the right to change that advice when we give our overall answer.
Thanks, Alan, and I think that's kind of what I was, and we all agreed with that at the top level. I guess we never really specifically discussed it at the second level. Okay, let me go to Charlotte.
So just whilst recognizing that for practical reasons or the comments that made for operational reasons not to try to focus on operational reasons and not focus on the legal issues, I just want to underline there that ICANN's own articles of incorporation state that they should conduct activities in conformity with relevant principles of international law, and it's very much these principles of international law that we're bringing by recognizing the Geneva Conventions embody the protection of the Red Cross emblem and older designations, and therefore it is very important to us that the legal considerations are really taken into consideration. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlotte. And I think I don't think any of us are saying that the legal considerations shouldn't be taken into consideration. I think for us, I'll speak as a registry. Excuse me. is that we have to operationalize it, no matter what it is. You know, even if ICANN says yes, we recognize those rights. Well, then me as a registry, I have to somehow implement it, either as a block, either as a reserve name, or as a dispute policy. So I don't think we're off. I don't think we're saying different things. And at least I hope we're not saying different things. I don't mean to read into what Mary was saying. Just going to what the registry discussion is, so I'm taking my chair hat off because I was in the registry discussion. It was the registry's accepted the legal discussion and the things as true. So all of that, assume all of that is true, and assuming that there is a legal basis, what do the registries support? And the registries, when discussing it, supported the GAC proposal simply because reserving the names was the easiest thing for the registries to do. All of the other things are actually much more administratively difficult. And so that said, we also support in general as a registry some sort of exception process, mostly I think for the Olympic marks because that's where we've seen evidence of legitimate uses of those marks. And so we had supported the exception process for things like if Olympic Airlines wanted Olympic dot, I don't know, I can't picture the 1900 new TLDs, but assume travel was in the new TLDs, you know, Olympic dot travel or Olympic dot, I don't think paint is a new TLD, but you know, those are the types of things that the registries had discussed being subject to some sort of exception process. So just to say, Charlotte, then, yes, we do consider the legal issues important, and for us as a registry, and the registrars aren't here, it's how do we operationalize that? So I have Thomas, and then I have Debbie.
As a non-com appointee, I'm allocated to the contracted party's house, but I'm neither a registry nor a registrar. And the point that you just made, Jeff, about costs of implementing protection mechanisms is completely irrelevant for me at this stage. If there were sufficient reason to add additional protections, they would need to be implemented. I think my point is slightly different. The situation as we see it now does not give reason to change existing policy. And so I think that, you know, if our discussion had to end in a couple of minutes, my report back to the council would be that for this first round, there's no justification for amending or overruling existing policy. There are mechanisms in place to reflect compliance or, you know, to respect applicable international laws. So it's there. It's there, and unless we see that there is a new threat that requires us amending existing rights protection mechanisms or adding new rights protection mechanisms, we should work with the solutions that we have. Having said that, I think, you know, it's hard to predict what the potential impact on these two organizations might be, but looking at the number of applications and looking at the type of applications, we have an awful lot of exclusive use applications. So, you know, I think we can take those out. So I think we can fence in the economic costs or the economic burden for the organizations. And it might be worthwhile also as an advice to the council to look into that. So to maybe, you know, talk about adding the names to the trademark clearinghouse or giving a cost reduction there, you know, did we know what the cost would be? That's a little bit hard to predict at the moment. But we're talking about Trademark Clearinghouse and URS. And I think that, you know, we should try to tackle it from an economic angle for the time being, review it, and if there's a need to change the policy, then that could be done for the second round.
Okay, thanks. And I agree we look at economics, but it's economics not only from the Red Cross Olympic side, but in a policy process, from our perspective, you have to look at the economics from the registry and registrar side as well. Chuck would say that if he were here, so I'm speaking for Chuck. Debbie.
And Debbie Hughes, for the record. So the threat that's instant, Thomas, is that we have new GTLDs that are about to launch, and the Geneva Conventions say those names should not be allocated to anyone other than the components of the movement. And so when the internet began with .com, .net, and .org, there were entities that registered exact matches. So certainly there is an instant threat that organizations or entities or individuals that are not members of the Red Cross movement might register those domain names. Obviously, none of us are clairvoyant, but if history serves, when .com, .net, .org, .biz, etc. all launched, there were unfortunately people that registered domain names with exact matches. And the issue to similar domain names is well taken. And as I've explained, and as I think our colleagues have explained previously when we've talked about this issue, similarity is a concern for, I think, the IOC, but certainly for the Red Cross movement. And I think I've demonstrated in the materials that we submitted that not only exact matches, but similar strings are a real concern, not hypothetical, sadly, but real. And so while we can appreciate that this, some may be open to having maybe step-down fees or free entrance into clearinghouse or the URS, having that reactionary, we're trying to prevent the harm before it occurs. Right now, what I have to do is play cleanup all the time. And we have a wonderful schema that protects these names. And sadly, I'm having to do cleanup work. What we're trying to do with the introduction of perhaps 1,400 new strings is to prevent retroactively, after the harm has occurred, trying to fix that in 1,400 new top-level extensions. But certainly I'm also encouraged by the fact that there may be some temperature for perhaps allowing, you know, us not having to spend the money to participate in a clearinghouse or perhaps using URS. I mean, our organization, as you know, we don't have trademarks like other organizations. We happen to have maybe one or two, but we don't have the luxury of claiming or using those types of mechanisms because our resources are sadly allocated other ways. And because of the nature of our names, that they're not just to identify our national societies, that those names are used separate and apart from any of us here. They're used by medical professionals and components of the military to help people. And so we don't have, sadly, the resources internally or the financial resources to retroactively correct a wrong that we believe and the Geneva Conventions and all the signatories of the conventions believe should not have occurred in the first place. But I do want to say that, you know, we encourage the conversation, but I just wanted to say that it is a true threat that we did have to deal with identical matches as well as the similar strings, and just wanted to clarify that as well.
Thanks, Debbie, and then I'm going to go over to Jim to and then to some closing thoughts.
Okay. Debbie actually said a lot of what I was going to say. History has shown that there will be unprecedented cyber squatting in the new GTLDs. We've seen it in .com, we've seen it in .net, we've seen it in all the existing extensions. And to think that 1,400 new ones are going to be handled differently just, I think, is not realistic. So I think we're looking at confronting an overwhelming number on a weekly basis. As you can see from the reports that I've distributed, getting 150 a week or 200 a week is just, in just a few of the extensions like .com and .net, is just really a drop in the bucket compared to what we expect when the new gTLDs come into place, when they're released, especially in the generic categories. And so I would just say again, I think that it is going to happen. I think what we're trying to do is to have measures that are reasonable, that comply with national laws and international laws, and that would prevent the harm that we think is very likely to happen once these are all released.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Okay, so I want to thank everyone for the discussion we've had today. I really want to encourage the, and this is more for the record since a lot of people have left, the constituencies and stakeholders to document their views. I think that is critical. That's what's been asked of us by the council, and it will be appreciative by the GAC however we come out on this issue. It seems like we all have kind of different thoughts on this, and we just need to start getting on some – we need to start documenting it, getting on calls, and figuring out ultimately how we want to respond to the GAC request, because what is certainly clear is that the GAC is frustrated at a number of different levels, but they need a response one way or the other, or – the other. There's many different ways we can go with that response. So let's all give that some thought. Let's document our discussions. Thomas, if you can document the thoughts that you have, maybe even give some thoughts on some mechanisms, both of you, Mary and Thomas, that could be explored in order to provide that kind of response. So is there any last questions? All right, I want to thank everyone for coming here. I know there's some overlapping sessions. I want to get to the protocol for who is session, so that's a uniquely registry session, but I want to get down there. Thanks.